And now to the News 24 studio for our regular Friday panel.
Hello and welcome to the World Today's weekly political panel, simulcast on ABC News 24 around the country. I'm Scott Bevan. Well, each Friday, leading up to the federal election, we're bringing you an insider's view of the campaign with former or retiring politicians. Joining me today, former Labor MP Maxine McHugh, the one-time ABC journalist, snatched the Sydney seat of Bennelong from John Howard in the 2007 election and remained a Kevin Rudd supporter through the Julia Gillard prime ministership. Former Howard Government Minister Nick Mitchin. He was Finance Minister and the Government Leader of the Senate before he left politics in 2011. And joining us from Tamworth, Tony Windsor, the Independent Member for the seat of New England. Now, he's not contesting this election after recently announcing his retirement from politics. Well, since this is a week where you say everything in threes, jobs, 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 cuts, 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 build, 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 may I say to our panellists, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
We got the message. Thank you.
And to those at home, welcome, welcome, welcome as well. And you can join us on Twitter using the hashtag AusVotes. Well, this week we hit the halfway mark of the 2013 campaign, but really who's counting the days? And the issues dominating have been parents, preferences, and what really happens in the makeup room. On Wednesday, Kevin Rudd and Tony Abbott held their second televised debate. This time it was a people's forum in a people's palace, the Brisbane Broncos Rugby League Club. Now, the leaders didn't exactly charge and tackle like prop forwards, but it was a more spirited debate than the first, with plenty said, perhaps too much said by Mr. Rudd in the view of Mr. Abbott.
All right, but I've just one final point
very
on this.
Quickly. No,
very
quickly.
Does this guy point. Ever shut up?
We're having a discussion, mate. We're having a discussion. And that is the standard debating technique when the questions get a bit sharp.
Well, Labor jumped on Tony Abbott's comments as a sign of character. This is Penny Wong the day after.
I think Mr. Abbott's a pretty aggressive kind of guy. That's his nature. He's been very disciplined of late, and you always wonder what's beneath the surface. And I think we got a glimpse of what happens when he snaps last night, just for a brief moment.
Finance Minister Penny Wong there. Maxine McHugh, what do you think? Was that a calculated comment with Mr. Abbott tapping into what many voters think of Mr. Rudd's oratory or verbosity, or was it a slip of the tongue?
I don't know. Could well have been rehearsed, but if I can look at it from the other point of view, I don't think Kevin in the next 2 weeks is going to shut up because he's got a lot to say.
Oh, no.
And he's particularly got a lot to say about Tony Abbott's paid parental leave scheme, which was the point of contention that they were going over at that point. And I think Penny is correct. It does show that Tony Abbott doesn't quite like it when you put a bit of pressure on him about detail. On the other hand, I have to say, I looked at that as a home viewer. I was sitting there watching the TV. I didn't go to that Broncos forum this week. But I think you would have had people in that audience probably nodding at the comments of both. When Tony Abbott said, you know, come on, don't you ever shut up, there would have been some people nodding. Equally, when Kevin retorted by saying, come on, we're having a discussion here, mate, a lot of other people would have nodded as well. I'd sort of cut the mustard on that one.
Nick Mitchin, many are wondering where that man of sharp words has gone to in Tony Abbott. I mean, the ALP has made that "what are you hiding, Mr. Abbott" ad around that idea. Where has the old Tony Abbott gone?
Oh, I think what you're seeing is the genuine Tony Abbott. I mean, the Labor Party's whole campaign is to try and needle Tony, to provoke him. You can see that with Penny Wong stretching the point a bit, I think, in her remarks. But and clearly, Kevin Rudd went into that debate wanting to provoke Tony. I thought Tony did very well not to deck him. I think if I'd been there, I wanted to smack him. But I thought, and it was fascinating to see all the commentators, you know, analysing what Tony had said, and is this rehearsed? And
does this
all come from focus groups? I'm sure it was just a top of the head remark, and it was done in jest, but it did get an audience reaction, and you know, the numbers were tight, but Abbott did win the vote from the audience that was there. I thought, look, it was a terrific forum, I've got to say, much better than that terrible debate in the press club. And I thought, as an Australian, a terrific show of our democracy to have the Prime Minister, the leader of the opposition, standing there together in front of 100 undecided voters debating the issues. I thought it was terrific.
And the questions, by the way, the questions are all very good questions.
They were. Yeah.
I mean, it was slightly skewed towards a younger audience, which I also thought was good. But they were very considered questions. People were very respectful. But there was a vigour about it.
So you agreed with Tony Abbott's comment that it was people won, journos nil.
Yeah.
No. As someone who spent 30 years in the business, Scott, I will always opt for the professionals and their right to pose questions. But it was not stitched up.
Yeah.
There was this kind of, as I say, a liveliness about it. And we're going to have another one next week at Rudy Hill, all to the good.
Tony Windsor in Tamworth. How much does this say about campaigns' degree of stage management and care about every word that's said, that there can be so much interest in one comment, does this guy ever shut up?
Well, I think both leaders have been frauds through this in terms of their personalities. And I think we've seen a snapshot into the two leaders this week, Kevin Rudd's treatment, his industrial relations treatment of the makeup artist, and Tony Abbott's thinly veiled thug approach to politics. Probably the tiredness and the stress is starting to unveil the masks on both these people. And I think that's one of the concerns that a lot of people have because of all this stage management and orchestration. They're not actually getting to see what either of these people are actually like, and those of us who have got a bit more an idea of what they're like personally and what their histories have been like, don't see very much of that during this campaign.
Well, you mentioned the makeup artist incident post the leaders' debate. The general consensus was that Kevin Rudd's performance in the second debate was better than the first, but that was overshadowed somewhat by this makeup artist's claim that the PM treated her badly. She later deleted this on her Facebook post. Well, Mr. Rudd said there were no hard feelings about it.
You know something, when you're preparing for a debate with 2 or 3 minutes to go and someone walks in and puts a bit of stuff on your face, you smile, you're in the zone, you're about to go. I don't know about you blokes, I'm not all that happy getting makeup put on the best of days, but anyway.
In the zone, Maxim McHugh, these comments by a makeup artist, how much damage could they do to Mr. Rudd's standing?
Well, I mean, I don't know whether to weep or cry about the sort of the fuss over this, but I mean, I'll take the question seriously. First of all, there's no clarity from this makeup artist about how Kevin Rudd treated her, so I note that. I also note that Sky News has said that they regard what she did in putting comments on Facebook as unprofessional. I don't know what Rudd did, right? Whether he was just a bit cool or dismissive or whatever. But I have spent 30 years being made up by makeup artists, mostly at the ABC, but also in the commercial environment. And a mark of professionalism of makeup artists, and this has always been the case with people that I've worked with, is that they're actually pretty sensitive to the person who's sitting in the chair, whether a politician or a comedian or a presenter about to go and do a show, because you're a bit revved up, you're a bit nervy, and some people like to be chatty, others like to be quiet and reflective. Now, Rudd is the latter. He would have gone in there preoccupied. Prime ministers have a bit to think about. He was perhaps not, in a particularly, not overly chatty. He certainly wouldn't have been. So I think it's unfortunate that this young lady has responded in the way that she has.
Tony Windsor, as a politician, is there anywhere that's safe these days where you can presume what you say or what your demeanour is perceived as won't turn up in a post or as print media fodder or in public chat?
Probably not, and I think we've all got to be a bit wary of that, and that's part of the reason why we do get this orchestration of things. People get, they make a flippant throwaway statement somewhere and it becomes the front page headlines, and so we get this sort of orchestrated, masked approach, particularly in this campaign where it's a presidential campaign that's going on. I think it's unfortunate that these sorts of things do get the attention they do. But I think this week we did actually get a snapshot into the real personalities of these two people. And even though Kevin Rudd mightn't have liked that incident with the makeup artist, one of the stark differences that I've seen between Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard, for instance, was that they both talked about industrial relations, that she actually practiced it with the people around her. And I don't think Kevin did, and I think that probably came through in an unfortunate moment this week.
Well, Tony, I'm afraid you don't know that. And what you're suggesting there by saying this is an IR-related matter is that there was some kind of harassment or something like that. There is no evidence for this whatsoever.
Well, I was going to say, none of us were in the room, so we don't actually know what happened. But I thought, stepping back, it was fascinating that this was one of the main takeouts of the debate, was what the makeup artist thought of the two men she was making up. It shows the power of social media. In previous campaigns, a post-book face by the makeup artist has become the big story. Previous campaigns, this would never happen. So social media is starting to really have an impact.
It will reshape future campaigns, do you
think? Well, I think so, increasingly, But I think the other problem for Kevin is this reinforces the doubts about him. You know, we had the issue on the VIP aircraft. We all know what his colleagues said about him, that he's got this kind of ugly side to his personality. I think that's the political problem that comes out of this for him.
Well, Tony Abbott seemed to be having no problem charming the ladies. It was all smiles between the opposition leader and Fiona Scott, the Liberal candidate who was the subject of last week's sex appeal comment. The two shared this exchange on the campaign trail this week.
And at the risk of exciting anyone, can I just say, obviously from that answer, she ain't just a pretty face, okay?
Miss Scott.
There's no need to apologise for what is an absolute charming compliment between friends. So, look, I think it's a sad day when a man cannot compliment a woman in what is a charming compliment. So, look, there's no need to apologise, and it's nice to have light moments in politics.
Charming compliment. Are we still talking politics here?
Well, I'm with Ms. Scott on this one, and I David Bradbury will not appreciate me saying this, but it's probably helped her a little bit in
exactly.
Lindsay.
Clearly, I agree. I think this has helped Fiona enormously.
But equally, I tell you what we don't know, Scott, is behind the scenes what Tony Abbott would have been saying about, if you like, his candidate in Greenway, Mr. Diaz, or what he would have had to have said about his candidate in Charlton this week. That was all That was all away from the cameras. It wouldn't have been pleasant.
Well, there has been
and nothing about their sex appeal.
There have been other things discussed this week, including policies during this campaign. And one of those that was further fleshed out during the Leaders' Forum was the paid parental scheme, the Coalition's paid parental scheme. Now, Tony Abbott admitted the levy on large companies will pay for only half of his signature policy. But he denied the rest would be funded from cuts to services.
It is fully funded by the levy, by discontinuing the current scheme, the current inadequate scheme, and through some consequential adjustments such as ending double dipping.
So it will mean cuts for the other half, which is $2.5 billion worth of cuts to jobs, health and education. That's where the math
goes.
This
isn't true. My scheme will utilise the money that's been put aside for your scheme, plus it will have further funding that comes to it from the company tax levy and from other schemes that will no longer need to continue.
Now, Kevin Rudd's line of attack then turned to why the very rich should benefit from the scheme.
Mr. Abbott's policy means that if you're a billionaire, like Clive Palmer, you're a billionaire, like Gina Reinhardt, if you're a billionaire, like all those folks, and I don't criticise those folks for being billionaires, but I think they would scratch their heads as to whether they should be entitled to paid parental leave under Mr. Abbott's scheme.
And the discussion of this issue has continued this morning. Nick Minchin, Mr. Rudd said of the Coalition's parental leave scheme this morning that it was bizarre and unaffordable. Bill Shorten has called it unfairly rewarding the few at the expense of the many, similar to what the PM just said. How risky is it for the opposition that this may be taken up by the electorate, that they might be thinking, on first blush sounds good, but how do we pay for it?
My sense is it's actually a vote winner. I think it's extremely attractive to everybody in small business who works in small business. It's very attractive to, women in the paid workforce. I see from the Vox Pops people citing this as one of the reasons they're thinking of switching their vote. I think the Coalition has answered how it's actually going to be paid for during the week. Tony might have fleshed that out a bit more than he did, but I think Matthias Cormann was on Fran Kelly the other day explaining how it's going to be paid for. So while the Coalition probably doesn't want to be diverted battered by this issue. I don't think it's hurting them in the way it's planning out. And Kevin gave us this lecture about not wanting to get into class warfare. Here he is playing the class warfare card. And yet, you know, the whole public service maternity leave scheme is based on, you know, salary and what you get in the salary. And public servants are very well paid. Is he going to abolish the public service scheme because of, you know, his views on class warfare? I'm not sure it's working for
Nick,
Mr. Rudd.
Nick, you're a former finance minister. Do you think this is defensible? $5.5 billion a year, given everything else the coalition wants to do if it wins government after September 7?
Well,
is it defensible?
There's a finance minister's club, and we always oppose all entitlement schemes of this kind. Look, I don't want to get
into my personal views
on this.
And would you oppose this one?
Because one thing I would
there's
say...
There's clearly disquiet in the coalition ranks about this one.
Yes, there is, but I think it can be paid for, but I've got to say, I don't see how this whole package, including the tax cut and the levy, is ever going to get through the Senate. Xenophon has said he opposes it. The Greens will obviously cut the threshold way back. We're not going to win the majority in the Senate.
That's so interesting. This is Abbott's signature policy, and you're saying already it won't get through
well,
the
I'm
Senate.
Well, I'm just saying, as the government leader, former government leader in the Senate, and someone who's had to negotiate these things through the Senate, Tony's very committed to it, but I've got to say, in terms of the numbers in the Senate, I don't see how this package as a whole is going to get through. They're going to have to be compromised.
Yeah, look, Scott, I think that's very interesting of Nick to say that, because here I see Tony Abbott's hanging a lot on this. This is his signature policy. It costs costs $5.5 billion a year. His comment on Wednesday night was barely comprehensible. The one thing he did admit was that the levy only pays for half of it.
Sure.
And then you try and go through the rest of it and it all gets murky. It's about as clear as mud. And the question has to be, Why is he still pursuing this when the rest of his team is not behind him on this?
Do you think the electorate's asking that?
Well, I think, as I say, it's going to be... I think it's very attractive for certainly a group of working women. Equally, there are plenty of other women who have not had the advantage of this. They're a little bit resentful of it. Then we get to self-funded retirees who discovered this week that, in fact, franking credits will not be paid because it's a levy, not a tax. Another little shoe that dropped this week.
Tony Windsor, how do you think this is playing in regional and rural Australia? What feedback are you hearing?
Well, I think both Maxine and Nick are both partly right on this. This is bad policy, and I'm sure... And I know the job you've got to do, Nick, and I understand it going into an election campaign, but I'm sure if you'd been if you were the finance minister or the shadow minister at the moment, you'd be having very serious views about this particular policy. But it's about the it's about the woman thing and the Abbott approach. That's why he calls it signature. He sees it as somewhat groundbreaking. I was very much opposed to the baby bonus, I think. You know, and the Liberal Party are out of their ground on this, I think. You know, they talk about personal responsibility and within the family and all of those sorts of things. And here we have this piece of policy which came out of the wind. And if you look at where it came from, it came out of the breeze when Tony was under a bit of attack over his views on women, etc. And I think it's unfortunate it's even in there, but I think Nick gave the game away. And hopefully he's right that, you know, this will get through the campaign. I think the coalition will probably win the election. And then this piece of legislation and I will probably get butchered in the Senate, and the Joe Hockeys this will be quite happy with that, I'd imagine.
And Nick, does that mean you obviously don't think that the coalition's vote will be significant enough to get control of the Senate?
No, it won't.
Right.
It won't. No, mathematically, there's no way the Senate the coalition can control the Senate.
And I think the only other point to make, Scott, is the Labor government put in place a comprehensive, fully funded paid parental scheme, the first in the country. That is in place now. It is a modest scheme, but it is fully costed and it's been rolled out.
Well, all right. Let's have a look at some polls, actually. A new poll out today shows Labor could be facing electoral defeat in Western Sydney. The Galaxy survey says the marginal seats of Reid, Werriwa, Lindsay, Greenway and Banks are all in trouble. Now, the ALP is also trailing in two key Victorian marginals. Kevin Rudd is on a campaign blitz of the traditional Labor heartland of Sydney's West, and he reckons he's on a Keating-style comeback like the former Prime Minister pulled off in 1993. Maxine, for Mr. Rudd to be invoking this morning the 93 campaign, almost trying to repeat history, as it were, when Paul Keating came back to defeat John Hewson, then how much does that statement reek of desperation?
Well, I covered the 1993 campaign, and I know there's been a lot of reference to it, and I do remember, I mean, the shocking figures that Paul Keating went into that campaign with. I mean, I think the Labor was on about 46%. This is different. Rudd went into the campaign in a strong position, has clearly dipped, and the question now is what kind of a comeback he can make in the last 2 weeks. Keating's comeback was really in the last 5 days, and it was via a series of debates with John Hewson, where, again, the pressure was put on, and as we know, we had the famous birthday cake moment. Maybe would you have the famous birthday cake moment over PPL? We'll see. But look, I mean, clearly these are crook polls for Labor. The question is to what extent things are recoverable from this position. But I know I've been looking at other polling this week. You look at that news poll yesterday, which showed that was an aggregated poll, which showed Rudd has improved in every state, in the cities, in the regions, across all age groups, certainly with women, and also showed that Labor is significantly ahead in Queensland. Other polls suggest that's not the case. So it depends what you look at this week. It's a bit confusing.
Tony Windsor, can you see a comeback in the offing? Can you see a birthday cake or equivalent about to be put on the table here?
Yes, I can, particularly with both these characters. I think they both have the capacity to blow up at any particular moment, and obviously each side will be hoping that it's the other one. So those things can happen. You can't rule it out. But you take a risk when you run a presidential-style campaign such as this, that if one of the president candidates goes down, the team goes down. But I'd urge people who, you know, that are interested in the political process, that we vote for representatives in electorates. Tony Abbott and Kevin Rudd are in two of those, and I'd urge people to get back and have a look at who the candidates are in their particular electorates, irrespective of their political persuasions, and just see who are the serious players. That's how the parliament or the government of the day is formed. It's not formed on whether Kevin Rudd has a bad or a good day, or Tony Abbott has a bad day in a D-cup or whatever. That's where it's at. It's with the people, and they'll make their decisions in each electorate as they vote.
That being the case, Tony, how do you think Barnaby Joyce is going?
He hasn't got to 50% yet. I think, you know, there's a lot of interest in that seat. I think, just to urge people, and Nick might be a bit interested in this, to reflect back on the Senate in 2010, and there's been a lot of argument over the last 3 years about this seat being a Conservative seat. In the Senate, I wasn't a candidate in the Senate, but 41% of New Englanders voted for the coalition in the Senate, so 59% didn't. That 41% is a significant number, because up till about 3 weeks ago, Barnaby's polling was between 39 and 41. There's now a very good independent candidate in the field, so it just depends where that 59 goes. And I wouldn't rule Barnaby out, obviously, but it's not over yet, and there's a big unknown vote in this particular seat, and the candidate that came into the pack a couple of weeks ago, I think that's addressed an audience that was looking for somewhere to go.
Tony, in regard to Barnaby Joyce, he said in regard to his preferencing One Nation, he said no deal was done. He said that he picked the order, he told the Australian newspaper, he picked the order standing on the street. So is that how you did it, stand on the street in terms of working out your preferences, or out in the paddock? What did you think of this comment from Mr. Joyce in regard to the preference non-deal?
Well, I think people get a glimpse of the intelligence of the bloke, but they'll make their own minds up on that. I'd been in politics for 22 years. Scott, I've never issued preferences. I've never handed out a how-to-vote card, either in state or federal parliament, that tells people how they should vote. I think it's an insult to the voter. Their preferences are their own, and any political party, or even an independent, if they in fact do it, I think it's offensive to hand out something telling someone that this, if you vote for me, this is how you're going to vote.
Nick Minchin,
after me. And
Sorry to cut across you there, Tony. Nick mentioned you once said we deal in the real world, not the ideal world. Just briefly, with preferences, it is all about the real world?
Oh, well, it is. And I must say, I've got to defend Barnaby. I mean, he's got nine candidates in that seat. He's got to reduce informality. He's got to have a how-to-vote card to make sure people vote formally. He's put One Nation at number six out of nine. So I think that this is a bit of a furphy. I think Barnaby's got a sensible approach to this. And I think he'll win.
Well, and that is where we have to leave this week's... Forgive us, Tony Windsor, we have to leave it there for time reasons. That's all for this week's political panel on The World Today. Simulcast on ABC News 24. Thanks to all our guests today. Tony Windsor there in Tamworth, Maxine McHugh and Nick Minchin here in Sydney. And you can listen to more from The World Today team on radio and online at abc.net.au/worldtoday. And this program will be posted on iView. I'm Scott Bevan. Join us again next Friday. Thanks so much for your company.
And thanks to Scott Bevan and the Friday panel.